Chapter 10. I didn't put up a fight. 160 trillion miles from nowhere, I mean. But I didn't speak to the mother thing as I got into her ship. It was shaped like an old-fashioned beehive, and it looked barely big enough to jump us to the spaceport. Pee-wee and I crowded together on the floor. The mother thing curled up in front and twiddled a shiny rack like an abacus. We took off, straight up. In a few minutes, my anger grew from sullenness to a reckless need to settle it. Mother thing!
One moment, dear. Let me get us out of the atmosphere.
She pushed something. The ship quivered and steadied. Mother thing!
Wait until I lower us, Kip.
I had to wait. It's as silly to disturb a pilot as it is to snatch the wheel of a car. The little ship took a buffeting. The upper winds must have been dillies. But she could pilot. Presently, there was a gentle bump, and I figured we must be at the spaceport. The mother thing turned her head.
All right, Kip. I sense your fear and resentment. Will it help to say that you two are in no danger? That I would protect you with my body, as you protected mine?
Yes, but...
Then let be. It is easier to show than it is to explain. Don't clamp your helmet. This planet's air is like your own.
Huh? You mean we're there?
I told you.
Pee-wee said at my elbow.
Just poof, and you're there.
I didn't answer. I was trying to guess how far we were from home.
Come, children.
It was midday when we left. It was night as we disembarked. The ship rested on a platform that stretched out of sight. Stars in front of me were in unfamiliar constellations. Slantwise down the sky was a thin curdling, which I spotted as the Milky Way. So Pee-wee had her wires crossed. We were far from home, but still in the galaxy. Perhaps we had simply switched to the night side of Vega 5. I heard Pee-wee gasp and turned around. I didn't have strength to gasp. Dominating that whole side of the sky was a great whirlpool of millions, maybe billions of stars. You've seen pictures of the Great Nebula in Andromeda? A giant spiral of two curving arms, seen at an angle. Of all the lovely things in the sky, it is the most beautiful. This was like that. Only we weren't seeing a photograph, nor even by telescope. We were so close, if close is the word, that it stretched across the sky twice as long as the Big Dipper as seen from home. So close that I saw the thickening at the center, two great branches coiling around and overtaking each other. We saw it from an angle so that it appeared elliptical, just as M31 in Andromeda does. You could feel its depth. You could see its shape. Then I knew I was a long way from home. That was home. Up there, lost in billions of crowded stars. It was some time before I noticed another double spiral on my right, almost as wide-flung, but rather lopsided and not nearly as brilliant, a pale ghost of our own gorgeous galaxy. It slowly penetrated that this second one must be the Greater Magellanic Cloud, if we were in the lesser, and if that fiery whirlpool was our own galaxy. What I had thought was the Milky Way was simply a Milky Way, the lesser cloud from inside. I turned and looked at it again. It had the right shape, a roadway around the sky, but it was pale skim milk compared with our own, about as our Milky Way looks on a murky night. I don't know how it should look, since I'd never seen the Magellanic Clouds. I've never been south of the Rio Grande, but I did know that each cloud is a galaxy in its own right, but smaller than ours, and grouped with us. I looked again at our blazing spiral, and was homesick in a way I hadn't been since I was 6. Pee-wee was huddling to the mother thing for comfort. She made herself taller and put an arm around Pee-wee.
There, there, dear. I felt the same way when I was very young and saw it for the first time.
Mother thing, where is home?
See the right half of it, dear, where the outer arm trails into nothingness? We came from a point 2/3 the way out from the center.
No, no, not Vega. I want to know where the sun is.
Oh, your star. But, dear, at this distance, it is the same.
We learned how far it is from the sun to the planet Lanador, 167,000 light-years. The mother thing couldn't tell us directly, as she did not know how much time we meant by a year, how long it takes Terra to go around the sun, a figure she might have used once or not at all, and is worth remembering as the price of peanuts in Perth. But she did know the distance from Vega to the sun, and told us the distance from Lanador to Vega with that as a yardstick. 6,190 times as great. 6,190 times 27 light-years gives 167,000 light-years. She courteously gave it in powers of 10, the way we figure, instead of using factorial 5. 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 equals 120, which is how Vagans figure. 167,000 light-years is 9.82 times 10 to the 17th miles. Round off 9.82 and call it 10. Then, 1 quintillion miles is the distance from Vega to Lanador, or from the sun to Lanador. Vega and the sun are back-fence neighbors on this scale. 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 miles. I refuse to have anything to do with such a preposterous figure. It may be short, as cosmic distances go, but there comes a time when the circuit breakers in your skull trip out from overload. The platform we were on was the roof of an enormous triangular building, miles on a side. We saw that triangle repeated in many places, and always with a two-armed spiral in each corner. It was the design the mother thing wore as jewelry. It is the symbol for 3 galaxies, 1 law. I'll lump here things I learned in driblets. The 3 galaxies are like our Federated Free Nations, or the United Nations before that, or the League of Nations still earlier. Lanador houses their offices and courts and files. The League's capital, the way the FFN is in New York, and the League of Nations used to be in Switzerland. The cause is historical. The people of Lanador are the old race. That's where civilization began. The 3 galaxies are an island group, like Hawaii State. They haven't any other close neighbors. Civilization spread through the lesser cloud, then through the greater cloud, and is seeping slowly through our own galaxy. That is taking longer. There are 15 or 20 times as many stars in our galaxy as in the other two. When I began to get these things straight, I wasn't quite as sore. The mother thing was a very important person at home, but here she was a minor official. All she could do was bring us in. Still, I wasn't more than coolly polite for a while. She might have looked the other way while we beat it for home. They housed us in that enormous building, in a part you could call a transients hotel, although detention barracks or jail is closer. I can't complain about accommodations, but I was getting confoundedly tired of being locked up every time I arrived in a new place. A robot met us and took us down inside. There are robots wherever you turn on Lanador. I don't mean things looking like the Tin Woodman. I mean machines that do things for you, such as this one, which led us to our rooms, then hung around like a bellhop expecting a tip. It was a 3-wheeled cart with a big basket on top for luggage if we had any. It met us, whistled to the mother thing in Vagan, and led us away, down a lift, and through a wide and endlessly long corridor. I was given my room again, a fake of a fake, with all errors left in, and new ones added. The sight of it was not reassuring. It shrieked that they planned to keep us there as long as... well, as long as they chose. But the room was complete, even to a rack for Oscar, and a bathroom outside. Just beyond my room was a fake of another kind, a copy of that Arabian Nights horror Pee-wee had occupied on Vega 5. Pee-wee seemed delighted, so I didn't point out the implications. The mother thing hovered around while we got out of spacesuits.
Do you think you will be comfortable?
Oh, sure, I agreed unenthusiastically.
If you want food or anything, just say so. It will come.
So? Is there a telephone somewhere?
Simply speak your wishes. You will be heard.
I didn't doubt her, but I was almost as tired of rooms that were bugged as of being locked up. A person ought to have privacy.
I'm hungry now,
Pee-wee commented.
I had an early breakfast.
We were in her room. A purple drapery drew back. A light glowed in the wall. In about 2 minutes, a section of wall disappeared. A slab at table height stuck out like a tongue. On it were dishes and silverware, cold cuts, fruit, bread, butter, and a mug of steaming cocoa. Pee-wee clapped and squealed. I looked at it with less enthusiasm.
You see?
The mother thing went on with a smile in her voice.
Ask for what you need. If you need me, I'll come. But I must go now.
Oh, please don't go, Mother Thing.
I must, Pee-wee dear, but I will see you soon. By the by, there are 2 more of your people here.
Huh? Who? Where?
Next door.
She was gone with gliding swiftness. The bellhop speeded up to stay ahead of her. I spun around. Did you hear that?
I certainly did.
Well, you eat if you want to. I'm going to look for those other humans.
Hey, wait for me!
I thought you wanted to eat.
Well...
Pee-wee looked at the food.
Just a sec.
She hastily buttered 2 slices of bread and handed one to me. I was not in that much of a hurry. I ate it. Pee-wee gobbled hers, took a gulp from the mug, and offered it to me.
Want some?
It wasn't quite cocoa. There was a meaty flavor, too. But it was good. I handed it back, and she finished it.
Now I can fight wildcats. Let's go, Kip!
Next door was through the foyer of our 3-room suite, and 15 yards down the corridor, where we came to a door arch. I kept Pee-wee back and glanced in cautiously. It was a diorama, a fake scene. This one was better than you see in museums. I was looking through a bush at a small clearing in wild country. It ended in a limestone bank. I could see overcast sky and a cave mouth in the rocks. The ground was wet, as if from rain. A caveman hunkered down close to the cave. He was gnawing the carcass of a small animal, possibly a squirrel. Pee-wee tried to shove past me. I stopped her. The caveman did not appear to notice us, which struck me as a good idea. His legs looked short, but I think he weighed twice what I do, and he was muscled like a weightlifter, with short, hairy forearms and knotty biceps and calves. His head was huge, bigger than mine, and longer, but his forehead and chin weren't much. His teeth were large and yellow, and a front one was broken. I heard bones crunching. In a museum, I would have expected a card reading, Neanderthal Man, circa Last Ice Age. But wax dummies of extinct breeds don't crack bones. Pee-wee protested.
Hey, let me look.
He heard. Pee-wee stared at him. He stared toward us. Pee-wee squealed. He whirled and ran into the cave, waddling but making time. I grabbed Pee-wee. Let's get out of here.
Wait a minute. He won't come out in a hurry.
She tried to push the bush aside. Pee-wee!
Try this,
she suggested. Her hand was shoving air.
They've got him penned.
I tried it. Something transparent blocked the arch. I could push it a little, but not more than an inch. Plastic? I suggested. Like Lucite, but springier?
More like the helmet of my suit. Tougher, though, and I'll bet light passes only one way. I don't think he saw us.
Okay, let's get back to our rooms. Maybe we can lock them. She went on feeling that barrier. Pee-wee! I said sharply. You're not listening!
What were you doing talking?
She answered reasonably.
When I wasn't listening.
Pee-wee, this is no time to be difficult!
You sound like Daddy. He dropped that rat he was eating. He might come back.
If he does, you won't be here, because I'm about to drag you. And if you bite, I'll bite back. I warn you. She looked around with a trace of animosity.
I wouldn't bite you, Kip, no matter what you did. But if you're going to be stuffy... Oh, well, I doubt if he'll come out for an hour or so. We'll come back.
Okay. I pulled her away. But we did not leave. I heard a loud whistle and a shout.
Hey, Buster! Over here!
The words were not English, but I understood, well enough. The yell came from an archway across the corridor, and a little farther on, I hesitated, then moved toward it because Pee-wee did so. A man about 45 was loafing in this doorway. He was no Neanderthal. He was civilized, or somewhat so. He wore a long, heavy woolen tunic, belted in at the waist, forming a sort of kilt. His legs below that were wrapped in wool, and he was shod in heavy, short boots, much worn. At the belt, and supported by a shoulder sling, was a short, heavy sword. There was a dagger on the other side of the belt. His hair was short, and he was clean-shaven, save for a few days' gray stubble. His expression was neither friendly nor unfriendly. It was sharply watchful.
"Thanks,"
he said gruffly.
"Are you the jailer?"
Pee-wee gasped.
"Why, that's Latin."
"What do you do when you meet a legionary, right after a caveman?" I answered, "No, I am a prisoner myself." I said it in Spanish and repeated it in pretty fair classical Latin. I used Spanish because Pee-wee hadn't been quite correct. It was not Latin he spoke, not the Latin of Ovid and Gaius Julius Caesar, nor was it Spanish. It was in between, with an atrocious accent and other differences. But I could worry out the meaning. He sucked his lip and answered,
"That's bad. I've been trying for 3 days to attract attention, and all I get is another prisoner. But that's how the die rolls. Say, that's a funny accent you have."
"Sorry, amigo, but I have trouble understanding you, too." I repeated it in Latin, then split the difference. I added in improvised lingua franca, "Speak slowly, will you?"
"I'll speak as I please, and don't call me amigo. I'm a Roman citizen, so don't get gay."
That's a free translation. His advice was more vulgar, I think. It was close to a Spanish phrase, which certainly is vulgar.
"What's he saying? It is Latin, isn't it? Translate!"
I was glad she hadn't caught it. "Why, Pee-wee, don't you know the language of poetry and science?"
"Oh, don't be a smarty. Tell me."
"Don't crowd me, hon. I'll tell you later. I'm having trouble following it."
"What is that barbarian grunting? Talk language, boy, or will you have 10 with the flat of the sword?"
He seemed to be leaning on nothing, so I felt the air. It was solid. I decided not to worry about his threat. "I'm talking as best I can. We spoke to each other in our own language."
"Pig grunts! Talk Latin, if you can."
He looked at Pee-wee as if just noticing her.
"Your daughter? Want to sell her? If she had meat on her bones, she might be worth a half denario."
Pee-wee clouded up.
"I understood that. Come out here and fight."
"Try it in Latin," I advised her. "If he understands you, he'll probably spank you." She looked uneasy.
"You wouldn't let him?"
"You know I wouldn't."
"Let's go back."
"That's what I said earlier." I escorted her past the caveman's lair to our suite. "Pee-wee, I'm going back and see what our noble Roman has to say. Do you mind?"
"I certainly do."
"Be reasonable, hon. If we could be hurt by them, the mother thing would know it. After all, she told us they were here."
"I'll go with you."
"What for? I'll tell you everything I learn. This may be a chance to find out what this silliness means. What's he doing here? Have they kept him in deep freeze a couple of thousand years? How long has he been awake? What does he know that we don't? We're in a bad spot. All the data I can dig up, we need. You can help by keeping out. If you're scared, send for the mother thing." She pouted.
"I'm not scared. All right, if that's the way you want it."
"I do. Eat your dinner." Jojo the dog face boy was not in sight. I gave his door a wide berth. If a ship can go anywhere in no time, could it skip a dimension and go anywhere to any time? How would the math work out? The soldier was still lounging at his door. He looked up.
"Didn't you hear me say to stick around?"
"I heard you, but we're not going to get anywhere if you take that attitude. I'm not one of your privates."
"Lucky for you."
"Do we talk peacefully, or do I leave?" He looked me over.
"Peace, but don't get smart with me, barbarian."
He called himself Yuño. He had served in Spain and Gaul, then transferred to the 6th Legion, the Victrix, which he felt that even a barbarian should know of. His legion's garrison was Eberacum, north of Londinium in Britain, but he had been on advance duty as a brevet centurion, he pronounced it centurio. His permanent rank was about like top sergeant. He was smaller than I am, but I would not want to meet him in an alley, nor at the palisades of a castra. He had a low opinion of Britons and all barbarians, including me.
Nothing personal, some of my best friends are barbarians.
Women, the British climate, high brass, and priests. He thought well of Caesar, Rome, the gods, and his own professional ability. The army wasn't what it used to be, and the slump came from treating auxiliaries like Roman citizens. He had been guarding the building of a wall to hold back barbarians, a nasty lot who would sneak up and slit your throat and eat you, which no doubt had happened to him, since he was now in the nether regions. I thought he was talking about Hadrian's Wall, but it was 3 days' march north of there, where the seas were closest together. The climate there was terrible, and the natives were bloodthirsty beasts who dyed their bodies and didn't appreciate civilization. You'd think the eagles were trying to steal their dinky island. Provincial, like me. No offense meant. Nevertheless, he had bought a little barbarian to wife, and had been looking forward to garrison duty at Eberacum when this happened. Yunio shrugged.
Perhaps if I'd been careful with lustrations and sacrifices, my luck wouldn't have run out. But I figured that if a man does his duty and keeps himself and his weapons clean, the rest is the CO's worry. Careful of that doorway. It's witched.
Longer he talked, the easier it was to understand him. The us endings turned to o, and his vocabulary was not that of De Bello Gallico. Horse wasn't aquus, it was caballo. His idioms bothered me, plus the fact that his Latin was diluted by a dozen barbarian tongues. But you can blank out every third word in a newspaper and still catch the gist. I learned a lot about the daily life and petty politics of the Victrix, and nothing that I wanted to know. Yunio did not know how he had gotten where he was, nor why, except that he was dead and awaiting disposition in a receiving barracks somewhere in the netherworld, a theory which I was not yet prepared to accept. He knew the year of his death, year 8 of the Emperor and 899 of Rome. I wrote out the dates in Roman numerals to make sure, but I did not remember when Rome was founded, nor could I identify the Caesar, even by his full name. There had been so many Caesars. But Hadrian's Wall had been built, and Britain was still occupied. That placed Yunio close to the 3rd century. He wasn't interested in the caveman across the way. It embodied to him the worst vice of a barbarian. Cowardice. I didn't argue, but I would be timid too, if I had saber-toothed tigers yowling at my door. Did they have saber-tooths then? Make it cave bears. Yunio went back and returned with hard dark bread, cheese, and a cup. He did not offer me any, and I don't think it was the barrier. He poured a little of his drink on the floor and started to chomp. It was a mud floor, the walls were rough stone, and the ceiling was supported by wooden beams. It may have been a copy of dwellings during the occupation of Britain, but I'm no expert. I didn't stay much longer. Not only did bread and cheese remind me that I was hungry, but I offended Yunio. I don't know what set him off, but he discussed me with cold thoroughness, my eating habits, ancestry, appearance, conduct, and method of earning a living. Yunio was pleasant, as long as you agreed with him, ignored insults, and deferred to him. Many older people demand this. Even in buying a 39-cent can of talcum, you learn to give it without thinking. Otherwise, you get a reputation as a fresh kid and potential juvenile delinquent. The less respect an older person deserves, the more certain he is to demand it from anyone younger. So I left, as Yunio didn't know anything helpful anyhow. As I went back, I saw the caveman peering out his cave. I said, "Take it easy, Jojo," and went on. I bumped into another invisible barrier blocking our archway. I felt it, then said quietly, "I want to go in." The barrier melted away, and I walked in, then found that it was back in place. My rubber soles made no noise, and I didn't call out because Pee-wee might be asleep. Her door was open, and I peeped in. She was sitting tailor fashion on that incredible oriental divan, rocking Madame Pompadour and crying. I backed away, then returned whistling, making a racket and calling to her. She popped out of her door with smiling face and no trace of tears.
Hi, Kip. It took you long enough.
That guy talks too much. What's new?
Nothing. I ate, and you didn't come back, so I took a nap. You woke me. What did you find out?
Let me order dinner, and I'll tell you while I eat. I was chasing the last bit of gravy when a bellhop robot came for us. It was like the other one, except that it had in glowing gold on its front, that triangle with three spirals.
Follow me,
it said in English. I looked at Pee-wee. Didn't the mother thing say she was coming back?
Why, I thought so.
The machine repeated.
Follow me. Your presence is required.
I laid my ears back. I have taken lots of orders, some of which I shouldn't have, but I had never yet taken orders from a piece of machinery. Go climb a rope, I said. You'll have to drag me. This is not what to say to a robot. It did. Pee-wee yelled,
Mother Thing! Where are you? Help us!
Her bird song came out of the machine.
It's all right, dears. The servant will lead you to me.
I quit struggling and started to walk. That refugee from an appliance dealer took us into another lift, then into a corridor whose walls whizzed past as soon as we entered. It nudged us through an enormous archway topped by the triangle and spirals, and herded us into a pen near one wall. The pen was not apparent until we moved. More of that annoying solid air. It was the biggest room I have ever been in. Triangular, unbroken by post or pillar, with ceiling so high and walls so distant that I half expected local thunderstorms. An enormous room makes me feel like an ant. I was glad to be near a wall. The room was not empty, hundreds in it, but it looked empty because they were all near the walls. The giant floor was bare. But there were three worm faces out in the center. Worm face's trial was in progress. I don't know if our own worm face was there. I would not have known, even if they had not been a long way off, as the difference between two worm faces is the difference between having your throat cut and being beheaded. But, as we learned, the presence or absence of the individual offender was the least important part of a trial. Wormface was being tried, present or not, alive or dead. The mother thing was speaking. I could see her tiny figure, also far out on the floor, but apart from the worm faces. Her birdsong voice reached me faintly, but I heard her words clearly, in English. From somewhere near us, her translated words were piped to us. The feel of her was in the English translation, just as it was in her bird tones. She was telling what she knew of worm-faced conduct, as dispassionately as if describing something under a microscope, like a traffic officer testifying, at 9:17 on the 5th, while on duty at, etc. The facts. The mother thing was finishing her account of events on Pluto. She chopped it off at the point of explosion. Another voice spoke, in English. It was flat with a nasal twang and reminded me of a Vermont grocer we had dealt with one summer when I was a kid. He was a man who never smiled nor frowned, and what little he said was all in the same tone, whether it was, "She is a good woman," or, "That man would cheat his own son," or, "Eggs are 59 cents, cold as a cash register." This voice was that sort. It said to the mother thing,
Have you finished?
I have finished.
The other witnesses will be heard. Clifford, Russell!
I jumped, as if that grocer had caught me in the candy jar. The voice went on.
Listen carefully.
Another voice started. My own. It was the account I had dictated, flat on my back on Vega 5. But it wasn't all of it. It was just that which concerned worm faces, Adjectives and whole sentences had been cut, as if someone had taken scissors to a tape recording. The facts were there. What I thought about them was missing. It started with ships landing in the pasture back of our house. It ended with that last worm face stumbling blindly down a hole. It wasn't long, as so much had been left out. Our hike across the moon, for example. My description of worm face was left in, but had been trimmed so much that I could have been talking about Venus de Milo instead of the ugliest thing in creation. My recorded voice ended, and the Yankee grocer voice said,
"Were those your words?"
"Huh? Yes."
"Is the account correct?"
"Yes, but..."
"Is it correct?"
"Yes."
"Is it complete?"
I wanted to say that it certainly was not, but I was beginning to understand the system. "Yes."
"Patricia Winant Reitzfeld?"
Pee-wee's story started earlier and covered all those days when she had been in contact with worm faces while I was not. But it was not much longer, for while Pee-wee has a sharp eye and a sharper memory, she is loaded with opinions. Opinions were left out. When Pee-wee had agreed that her evidence was correct and complete, the Yankee voice stated,
"All witnesses have been heard. All known facts have been integrated. The three individuals may speak for themselves."
I think the worm faces picked a spokesman, perhaps the worm face, if he was alive and there. Their answer, as translated into English, did not have the guttural accent with which worm face spoke English. Nevertheless, it was a worm face speaking. That bone-chilling yet highly intelligent viciousness, as unmistakable as a punch in the teeth, was in every syllable. Their spokesman was so far away that I was not upset by his looks, and after the first stomach-twisting shock of that voice, I was able to listen more or less judicially. He started by denying that this court had jurisdiction over his sort. He was responsible only to his mother queen, and she only to their queen groups. That's how the English came out. That defense, he claimed, was sufficient. However, if the Three Galaxies Confederation existed, which he had no reason to believe, other than that he was now being detained unlawfully before this hive full of creatures met as a kangaroo court, if it existed, it still had no jurisdiction over the only people. First, because the organization did not extend to his part of space. Second, because, even if it were there, the only people had never joined, and therefore its rules, if it had rules, could not apply. And third, it was inconceivable that their queen group would associate itself with this improbable Three Galaxies, because people do not contract with animals. This defense was also sufficient. But disregarding, for the sake of argument, these complete and sufficient defenses, this trial was a mockery, because no offense existed even under the so-called rules of the alleged Three Galaxies. They, the worm faces, had been operating in their own part of space, engaged in occupying a useful but empty planet, Earth. No possible crime could lie in colonizing land inhabited merely by animals. As for the agent of Three Galaxies, she had butted in. She had not been harmed, she had merely been kept from interfering, and had been detained only for the purpose of returning her where she belonged. He should have stopped. Any of these defenses might have stood up, especially the last one. I used to think of the human race as lords of creation, but things had happened to me since. I was not sure that this assemblage would think that humans had rights compared with worm faces. Certainly the worm faces were ahead of us in many ways. When we clear jungle to make farms, do we worry if baboons are there first? But he discarded these defenses, explained that they were intellectual exercises to show how foolish the whole thing was under any rules from any point of view. He would now make his defense. It was an attack. The viciousness in his voice rose to a crescendo of hatred that made every word slam like a blow. How dared they do this? They were mice voting to bell the cat. I know, but that's how it came out in translation. They were animals to be eaten, or merely vermin to be exterminated. Their mercy would be rejected if offered. No negotiation was possible. Their crimes would never be forgotten. The only people would destroy them. I looked around to see how the jury was taking it. This almost empty hall had hundreds of creatures around the three sides, and many were close to us. I had been too busy with the trial to do more than glance at them. Now I looked, for the worm face's blast was so disturbing that I welcomed a distraction. They were all sorts, and I'm not sure that any two were alike. There was one 20 feet from me who was as horrible as Wormface, and amazingly like him, except that this creature's grisly appearance did not inspire disgust. There were others almost human in appearance, although they were greatly in the minority. There was one really likely-looking chick as human as I am, except for iridescent skin and odd and skimpy notions of dress. She was so pretty that I would have sworn that the iridescence was just makeup, but I probably would have been wrong. I wondered in what language the diatribe was reaching her. Certainly not English. Perhaps she felt my stare, for she looked around and unsmilingly examined me, as I might a chimpanzee in a cage. I guess the attraction wasn't mutual. There was every gradation from pseudo-worm face to the iridescent girl, not only the range between, but also way out in left field. Some had their own private aquaria. I could not tell how the invective affected them. The girl creature was taking it quietly. But what can you say about a walrus thing with octopus arms? If he twitches, is he angry? Or laughing? Or itches where the twitch is? The Yankee-voiced spokesman let the worm face rave on. Pee-wee was holding my hand. Now she grabbed my ear, tilted her face, and whispered,
"He talks nasty!"
She sounded awed. The worm face ended with a blast of hate that must have overtaxed the translator, for instead of English, we heard a wordless scream. The Yankee voice said flatly,
"But do you have anything to say in your defense?"
The scream was repeated. Then the worm face became coherent.
"I have made my defense, that no defense is necessary."
The emotionless voice went on to the mother thing.
"Do you speak for them?"
She answered reluctantly.
"My lord peers, I am forced to say that I found them to be quite naughty."
She sounded grieved.
"You find against them?"
"I do."
"Then you may not be heard. Such is the law."
"Three galaxies, one law. I may not speak."
The flat voice went on.
"Will any witness speak favorably?"
There was silence. That was my chance to be noble. We humans were their victims. We were in a position to speak up, point out that from their standpoint, they hadn't done anything wrong, and ask mercy, if they would promise to behave in the future. Well, I didn't. I've heard all the usual sweetness and light that kids get pushed at them, how they should always forgive, how there's some good in the worst of us, etc. But when I see a black widow, I step on it. I don't plead with it to be a good little spider and please stop poisoning people. A black widow spider can't help it, but that's the point. The voice said to the worm faces,
"Is there any race anywhere which might speak for you? If so, it will be summoned."
The spokesman Wormface spat at the idea. That another race might be character witnesses for them disgusted him.
"So be it. Are the facts sufficient to permit a decision?"
Almost immediately, the voice answered itself.
"Yes. What is the decision?"
Again, it answered itself.
"Their planet shall be rotated."
It didn't sound like much. Shucks, all planets rotate, and the flat voice held no expression. But the verdict scared me. The whole room seemed to shudder. The mother thing turned and came toward us. It was a long way, but she reached us quickly. Pee-wee flung herself on her. The solid air that penned us solidified still more, until we three were in a private room, a silvery hemisphere. Pee-wee was trembling and gasping, and the mother thing comforted her. When Pee-wee had control of herself, I said nervously, "Mother thing? What did he mean? Their planet shall be rotated?" She looked at me without letting go of Pee-wee, and her great soft eyes were sternly sad.
It means that their planet is tilted 90 degrees out of the space-time of your senses and mine.
Her voice sounded like a funeral dirge played softly on a flute. Yet the verdict did not seem tragic to me. I knew what she meant. Her meaning was even clearer in Vagan than in English. If you rotate a plane figure about an axis in its plane, it disappears. It is no longer in a plane, and Mr. A Square of Flatland is permanently out of touch with it. But it doesn't cease to exist. It just is no longer where it was. It struck me that the worm faces were getting off easy. I had halfway expected their planet to be blown up, and I didn't doubt that three galaxies could do so. Or something equally drastic. As it was, the worm faces were to be run out of town and would never find their way back. There are so many, many dimensions. But they wouldn't be hurt. They were just being placed in Coventry. But the mother thing sounded as if she had taken unwilling part in a hanging. So I asked her.
You do not understand, dear, gentle Kip. They do not take their star with them.
Oh, was all I could say. Pee-wee turned white. Stars are the source of life. Planets are merely life's containers. Chop off the star, and the planet gets colder and colder and colder, then still colder. How long until the very air freezes? How many hours or days to absolute zero? I shivered and got goose pimples. Worse than Pluto. Mother thing? How long before they do this? I had a queasy misgiving that I should have spoken, that even worm faces did not deserve this. Blow them up, shoot them down, but don't freeze them.
It is done,
she sang in that same dirge-like way. What?
The agent charged with executing the decision waits for the word. The message goes out the instant we hear it. They were rotated out of our world even before I turned to join you. It is better so.
I gulped and heard an echo in my mind. 'Twere well it were done quickly. But the mother thing was saying rapidly,
Think no more, Aunt, or now you must be brave.
Huh? What mother thing? What happens now?
You'll be summoned any moment for your own trial.
I simply stared. I could not speak. I had thought it was all over. Pee-wee looked still thinner and whiter, but did not cry. She wet her lips and said quietly,
You'll come with us, Mother Thing?
Oh, my children, I cannot. You must face this alone.
I found my voice. But what are we being tried for? We haven't hurt anybody. We haven't done a thing.
Not you, personally. Your race is on trial. Through you.
Pee-wee turned away from her and looked at me, and I felt a thrill of tragic pride that in our moment of extremity, she had turned. Not to the mother thing, but to me, another human being. I knew that she was thinking of the same thing I was. A ship hanging close to Earth, only an instant away, and yet perhaps uncounted trillion miles in some pocket of folded space, where no dew line gives warning, where no radar can reach. The Earth, green and gold and lovely, turning lazily in the warm light of the sun. A flat voice. No more sun. No stars. The orphaned moon would bobble once, then continue around the sun, a gravestone to the hopes of men. The few at Lunar Base and Luna City and Tombaugh Station would last weeks or even months, the only human beings left alive. Then they would go, if not of suffocation, then of grief and loneliness. Pee-wee said shrilly,
Kip, she's not serious! Tell me she's not!
I said hoarsely, Mother thing, are the executioners already waiting? She did not answer. She said to Pee-wee,
It is very serious, my daughter. but do not be afraid. I exacted a promise before I surrendered you. If things go against your race, you too will return with me and be suffered to live out your little lives in my home. So, stand up and tell the truth, and do not be afraid.
The flat voice entered the closed space.
The human beings are summoned.